Connecticut Green Party meeting, Eugene and Monetary Reform Workshop, May 16th, 2020.
Okay.
Still working on it.
Yep. So you'll just announce it when you're ready, right, Jim? Or Michael?
Well, I'm just checking with Eric and Mary and Tatiana. I mean, the way...
Mm-hmm.
So is this the Greenbacks group?
This is still...
It looks like there's 10 participants assigned to this.
Yeah, this is the workshop on monetary reform. The Greenback.
I just, let's see, joined...
Okay. Who is present? Okay. I'm not sure how many other people we have. And okay, let us just start the workshop. And obviously it's being recorded, and that will be helpful. Sue?
Yes.
Hello, sir. Glad to see you here. So we're beginning the workshop on greening the dollar, something that the Banking and Monetary Reform Committee of the Green Party have been working on for about 17 months, and studying it, analyzing, and trying to figure out how the Green Party should implement the greening the dollar plank that's in our platform. And back in September of 2019, we were following the economic news where the Fed began depositing money into repo accounts, which are overnight banking systems that banks enable other banks to borrow money overnight, or sometimes for a two-week period, limited amounts of time, in order to meet their needs, as well as for the banks that are loaning money to earn interest overnight for their own profit. But these repo markets, REPO, began to seize up, and the Fed had to introduce about $100 billion, and we wondered about that, and the explanation was that it was a glitch, but it was temporary. And it was based on individual circumstances in September. Don't worry about it, everything's under control. And the same event happened in December, where they had to put even more money in. So we were very suspicious that the business cycle, which had been on an upswing and expansion since March 2009, right after the 2008 crash, the economy rebounded. Even though individuals didn't rebound, people lost their jobs, lost their houses, and were put under a great stress and in increasing indebtedness. But the stock market rebounded, and the economy began to grow again. And so when we look at February of 2020, we saw that this business expansion had been going on for 11 years, and no other previous expansion had gone for more than 9.5 years. So we're going back to 1850s, that periodic a business cycle, recessions and crashes occur. And this one was very long-winded. And so that from our analysis, it was inevitable that there was going to be a recession. We didn't know how deep, and it was going to be, although it's going to be very significant. And so the COVID COVID-19 pandemic occurred, but it was only the trigger for what for the business cycle collapse that was inevitable. And so do any other people have comments from our banking committee at this point?
Well, just to say that the business cycles in this country are based on our monetary system, and that's the problem. It's an unstable system. It's been that way since we got private banks controlling our economy.
And how is money created in the United States? This isn't talked about. It's not. We don't have instruction on it in our high schools, in colleges. If you take an economics course, you get all kinds of equations, all kinds of complicated structural analyses, but nobody really talks about money and how it's created. And when we began to study this question, we first understood that only about 3% of U.S. dollars are in coins or physical bills. 97% of U.S. monetary system is purchased on screens. And this has implications, one of which is that bankers are able to create money out of nothing. And this is the chief way the monetary system is expanded. And when a bank loans you the money to buy a house, they, in effect, just put numbers in your checking account for $200,000, say, for a house. You transfer that money to, you never really see it, it goes to the homeowner. But the bank is enabled to not only collect the principal payments of that $200,000, but also the interest. And the interest may be double or triple the cost of the house. And the banks receive that interest as profit. But the banks are able to float those loans, and they don't just do it with their capital. That is the amount of money they have accumulated as assets that the bank owns, and then the customer accounts where we put in money and savings accounts and so forth. I mean, you can loan a certain amount of money, but the way the Federal Reserve System works is that in ordinary times, it's a 10-to-1 ratio. It's a thing called the fractional reserve banking, and you can find that if you just Google that, you'll find explanations of it in little cartoons on the internet, which are very interesting. But the banks are able to loan 10 times the amount of money they have at hand, and that's the created money. Sue, you've studied this quite a bit. Do you want to amplify on that point?
I'd say a few things. First, I want to welcome our attendees, Bud and Mr. Wasaka. I don't know your first name.
I don't have a first name. My name is Wasaka.
Ah, okay.
An Indian name.
Ah, okay, great. And I just wanted to ask both of you, what is your thought? What have you learned in your life of where our money is created? Where does it come from?
Wasaka, you want to go first?
I don't know where to start, but
Doc actually turned me on to this. We're both part of a group called Common Good Finance or Common Good Earth, and I would actually like to read a piece. One of the members, one of the principals, put together a book called the Butterfly Society, and there's a discussion on the populist movement. William Jennings Bryan. Then the next part is a discussion between Edison and Ford. And Eugene, you kind of touched on this. William Jennings Bryan was a leader of the Prideless movement. After it dropped the third party effort, he delivered the most famous speech in American political history on July 9, 1896 at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Two paragraphs contained enough. We say in our platform that we believe that the right to coin money and issue money is a function of government. We believe it. We believe it as part of sovereignty and can no more with safety be delegated to private individuals than can the power to make penal statutes or levy laws for taxation. Mr. Jefferson, who was once regarded as good democratic authority, seems to have different opinion from the gentleman who has addressed us on the part of the minority. Those who are opposed to this proposition tell us that the issue of paper money is a function of the bank and that the government ought to go out of the banking business. I stand with Jefferson rather than with them and tell him, as he did, that the issue of money is a function of the government and that the bank should go out of the governing business. And then Edison and Ford, this is the part that really got my attention. Henry Ford and the inventor Thomas Edison visited the Muscle Shoals nitrate mortar power projects near Florence, Alabama. They used the opportunity to articulate at length upon their alternative money theories, which were published in two reports which appeared in the New York Times on December 4, 1921 and December 6, 1921. Objecting to the fact that the government planned, as usual, to raise the money by issuing bonds, which would be bought by the banking and non-banking sector, which would then have to be paid back with money raised from taxes and with interest added, they proposed instead that the government simply create the currency it required and spend it into society through this public project. Thomas Edison made it plain in the following excerpt from the New York Times. That is to say, under the old way, any time we wish to add to national wealth, we are compelled to add to the national debt. Now, that is what Henry Ford wants to prevent. He thinks it's stupid, and so do I, that the loan of $30 million of their own money, the people of the United States should be compelled to pay back $66 million. That is what amounts to with interest. People who will not turn a shovelful of dirt nor contribute a pound of material will collect more money from the United States than will the people supply the material and do the work. That is the terrible thing about interest in all our great bond issues. The interest is always greater than the principal. And you all know the rest of it. I won't bother reading.
Right. Thank you.
So this system is common good finance. They gave their first 10 $1,250 grants. They do microloans from $500 to $1,000 with no interest. But the best part, my favorite part, is an escrow account. So here in New London, we have a Fiddlehead's Food Co-op. So every time you buy something there, 5% of that purchase will go into like an escrow account. And the members decide how that money's spent. So it could be healthcare, it could be community gardens, it could be renewable energy, what the members want to spend it on, not somebody at the top. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Wasaka, I mean, Wasaka. Wasaka.
Mr. I've been involved in alternative currencies and in banking for a good solid 10 years now. Right now, what I do is, I work as a trustee establishing banks for small villages. So my personal interest is in helping small rural villages, up to a few hundred people, 250 people maybe, develop their own internal system that's completely outside the U.S. monetary system. So I set them up with a whole series of trusts, including a bank, a financial fiduciary foundation, etc., so they can then operate on either their own currency or no currency. A lot of communities only need banking for basically foreign exchange with the outside world. And then you link all these villages together. We have 14,000 members in New Earth Nations who were just beginning to put all this together. But they can link. So that's my experience. I have no interest in particularly trying to reform the U.S. system. It's so horribly corrupt and biased. We have no hope. I think that's a complete waste of time. It's like trying to turn the Republican Party liberal. You know? It's you're not going to convince the people with all the money who own the Federal Reserve and drive our monetary system to change. There is too much at stake for them in this. They're not going to shift. The only solution is to operate outside them where they can't get you. So we set up trans-jurisdictional trusts, which are outside the U.S. and all the statutory jurisdictions inside the U.S. and the states. So it's not part of them.
I have a question. Are these all for Native American villages?
No, that's my personal interest. I'm working with Bretonnia right now, which is a United Kingdom organization. They just declared their independence from the Queen 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, something like that. And there's about 700 of them who are actively moving. We're establishing a capital city called New Britain, and we're setting it up under UK statutory regulations, which are close enough to the U.S. that I can understand them readily. And so I'll work with anybody.
Where are these located?
These what?
The villages that you're setting these trusts up for and so on.
The ones I set up so far are mostly in Colorado. I set up one in Vermont. There's a confederation of Aboriginal tribes in Saskatchewan that has expressed a lot of interest, so we're talking to them. There's one in Australia we're talking to. I mentioned Great Britain, the UK, although it's no longer, technically it's no longer in the UK, but it's all over the world. There's people everywhere. The 14,000 members are scattered around the world. That includes Africa, Asia, I mean, not Antarctica, but other than that, pretty much anywhere. We work with micronations. My skill set is in helping people form a micronation if they want to. You know, what do you need to do with the United Nations and all that to declare yourself a nation? And what are your limits? What can you do to be recognized? And you can get to the level of like Scotland. But to get beyond Scotland, you have to then become a formal accepted member of the United Nations, which means all the other ones have to agree to let you in. And they, of course, never want to do that. Unless you're so worthless, they don't care about you at all and nobody wants you.
I just find all of that extremely interesting.
Well, it's all based on natural law and common law, which supersedes jurisdictional law. Most people don't even realize that. You know, if you want to sue me, you have to go to international court because I'm not part of the U.S. jurisdiction. So the jurisdiction doesn't apply. And they may argue it, but when they have, we've come in force and sued the judges for, you know, operating out of color, you know, under color of law falsely. They lose their judgeship for that. So they back right off. We have a number of people who know how to work this issue pretty damn well.
Do you have a website in which we could look at?
Sure. NewEarthNations.org.
Thank you.
It's very preliminary right now. We're just putting stuff up. And we're doing a whole series of workshops on this stuff through New Earth Foundations. www.newearth.foundation instead of .com, .foundation. The foundation is the funding arm that funds all this stuff, that we, you know, where we get the money to help villages put their capital together and stuff like that. So we have a whole very developed program that we're just rolling out, you know, to help people figure out how to do this. How do you plan a village? You know, how do you pull a community together? Because you need two strong things when you start looking at communities. One, you need a lot of interpersonal skills. So you need people who can recognize their own crap. Otherwise, you just get drama like no tomorrow. And so that uses things like sociocracy and things of that sort for governance. So governance becomes very people-oriented. And the second piece that's completely different that gets missed in most intentional communities is you need people with economic and financial smarts. If you think it's hard to start a business, you know, 90% fail. Imagine trying to start a community which has to figure out how to make money in the world. But it can be done. In fact, it's not that hard if you just pay attention. I didn't mean to get on a soapbox on this. I was just trying to explain where I was going.
Thank you. I know some of it. some of the common law issues from a grassroots group. I'm a member here in New York City, fighting the implementation of 5G using common law. But but I wanted to ask you two things. One is, in setting up your communities, what relationship do they have to the outside world?
Same as any other country would. How do you mean the question? Do you mean politically, legally?
Voluntarily. For instance, if you need goods or services from outside your community, your nation? How do you get them?
Yeah. We buy them.
With what?
Money.
Right, but if it's the goods and services are coming from outside your nation, what money are you using for your transactions?
Well, if it's coming from France, we use euros, right?
And what are they accepting when you want to buy the euros to pay for their products?
We don't buy the euros, we have the euros.
Oh, how do you get the euros?
By what we sell.
So,
for example, let me just give you a simple example, and I think you'll get it. So a starter village, we recommend, starts with 10 households. That's typically 20, could be 30, 40 people, but it's at least 20 typically. So the first thing you do is you buy a big parcel of property that's away from everybody so you've got control. You put up the houses, you build the houses.
Wait a minute. Who are you buying it from?
Whoever owns it.
With what money?
Everybody puts in the amount of money. It typically takes about $50,000-$60,000 anyway.
Dollars? U.S. dollars?
If it's in the U.S., yes, U.S. dollars.
Okay.
Whatever the local currency is, where the land is currently located.
Okay, so you have a dependency on the U.S. financial system.
If it's in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's pretty minimal dependency, but that's the same dependency France has on the U.S. system.
But if I bought a property, became a citizen of your nation, and I wanted to buy something produced in California, how do I pay for it?
Shocker, could I jump in for a minute?
This is not a 10-minute conversation. I'm sorry. I've got to go through a lot of basics with you so you understand how it works. There's the economy of the village, which is internal, right? And then it then has a core business which backs up the village, which is how it raises foreign exchange capital, U.S. dollars in your terms, right? Which is what you then use to buy things you need externally. But your first agenda is to try to minimize your internal costs. You do this through renewable energy. I mean, the way you construct your village minimizes your cost to operate. It's very sustainable.
Okay.
And you grow your own food. So that requires much less inputs. Now, if you want to spend all your money on flying around the world and stuff like that, then you're going to need a lot of external money, which means you're going to need a bigger business inside the village if you want all the villagers to be able to do that.
Okay. The other question I wanted to ask you, it's always, for me, a personal thing, is the bankers, like you said, the bankers are so powerful that
yeah.
It's impossible to fight them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, my feeling is the nation... The people of this nation, I have to depend on them. They're my world, and they're going to really have worse and worse lives if the whole system isn't changed. And I
yes, that's correct. I agree with that.
And,
yeah.
And I
these are the same people who are managing the virus for us, right? So they're doing a good job with that.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that. Also,
Rita, go ahead.
I think it's reached a point where it's completely unsustainable.
Yeah, and I do too. It's about to collapse.
Yes, it is. It
is. A couple of years. It will take a little while.
And we're hoping that we can replace it with something better. You know, and this is I will also mention, this is an international issue. Okay, what the banks do here is what the banks do, the major banks do in the other countries as well.
Yeah. The U.S. is particularly insidious, but it's not that different from central banks in other countries.
No,
at least in other countries, it's not a private corporation.
Some of them are, but like they are. Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is that the debt limit has been reached in terms of the amount of debt that you can continue to pay interest on. Because this cannot go on, because we don't have money in this country to continue to pay this kind of interest to the banks. And in the process of increasing in size, the banks have come to be major shareholders in the biggest corporations in the world, and most of them are situated in the United States. So we're looking at a situation where they're virtually controlling everything, and that can't last.
The Fed balance sheet has gone up from about $4.2 billion, which was after the crash in 2008, and now it's at $5.7 trillion. Okay, $4.2 trillion to $5.7, about a 57% increase in less than 2 months. And they're projected on growing and growing to six and beyond trillion. And that means the debt, the federal debt is going from when it started at 22, 23 trillion to go to possibly even 32 trillion. And that's going to put pressure on the dollar. And
well, I have a simple question, which is, what is the interest rate we are paying on the debt? It's a few percent, right? Mostly through treasury bills.
Tiny. Yes.
So we just added, are in the process of adding 50% to the national debt. It doesn't, if the interest rate goes up just 1%, that increases right. the debt payments by 50%, which would bankrupt this country.
Yes. And
that's why I'm trying to get out as fast as I can and get off of my little enclave up in the mountains away from everybody. I don't want to be around
with
the Fed. It'll make our community look like a cakewalk.
We are interested in the developments you describe, but we really...
Well, you're all welcome to join, by the way. Just go to the organizations. You can sign up. You'll learn more. We too have classes that teach people. They're mostly taught out of Scotland, actually, but he knows the whole world system pretty well. Greg Paul is his name. He's one of the trustees of New Earth Nations. There's another one out of Berlin who's very bright, Wolfgang Noor. It's got a very active international group that knows what they're doing. And we're all on the school of time to stop talking and start acting. Time to stop complaining about it and actually doing something. So we've got a program. There's other approaches people can take. If you want to go the approach we take, feel free to join. We'll help you set up a community. You can take it all the way to a micronation. We'll show you how to do that. Have it registered as an independent nation.
Sue Stack.
Pardon?
Sue Stack.
Stack.
Stack. Do you use the Stack?
In Zoom, if you want to talk, you say Stack, and then therefore you're recognized.
Oh,
yeah, you get on a list.
Okay, so
Coach, shut up. You're talking also, too much.
Bud, you want to be on the Stack too?
Yes.
Bud, I don't need to.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I just want to reiterate what Rita has said about the concern that our current privately controlled monetary system can't last. It's a real crisis. I mean, I've studied monetary history for 10 years.
Yep.
And this is way beyond anything that I've read about. And it's very scary. And I would like, at least in this group, to discuss what's in the Green Party platform that could be entered into Congress and published to the American people in a very simple way. to give some hope, instead of having a world that would be horrible. And so I just want to reiterate that I'd like to talk about greening the dollar and the issues in that, what would have to change, because I've studied it for a number of years. It's not a difficult change, it's political will. And I just want to welcome Vic Lancia, who came in. Okay.
There's a person on the stack, the gentleman with the beard. I don't know your name, sir.
Bud.
Bud? Okay, could you, you had a comment to make?
Yes, I just want to go back to Common Good Finance for a minute, because I think it's a real simple way to understand what Rashak is talking about. So at Fiddlehead's Food Co-op, we have a dime ATM machine. So I can transfer money back and forth, U.S. dollars back and forth, between my Common Good Finance account and Dime Bank. Right there at the machine, I can do it online. I have a little card, Common Good Finance card, and here's a brochure with Common Good Earth on it, and I'm gonna put I'm gonna put that in the chat right now. And I want to, Rashaka, I want to work with you on this. I was just talking to Frederick yesterday, our engineer, about a commission, a renewable energy commission here in New London, a geothermal and solar microgrid district, which I think will, and I think this is how we can finance it. And I think we can get that that interest or that user fee down to 2.5% rather than bond the money for it. I think we can create the money to do this with. Thank you.
Bud, what is your last name?
McAllister. It should be showing up, because I can see it on the screen.
Okay, here. Thank you. The solution that Sue is mentioning is called the NEED Act, which is the National Emergency Employment Defense Act. And it was introduced by Representative Dennis Kucinich of Cleveland in 2011. And it never got to the banking, out of the banking committee, and was killed there, of course. But there were three, Dennis Kucinich was a young mayor of Cleveland, Ohio, and the powers that be wanted Cleveland to sell its municipal power plant, and he fought strenuously to prevent that, and the rates would have skyrocketed if he hadn't preserved that plant, which, you know, has lower electric rates than the privately owned utilities. So he had a long populist struggle in his history. The three aspects of the NEED Act, we only have about 5 minutes long remaining, is important to discuss because not many people know about it. And that's what we're trying in this Banking and Monetary Reform Committee, is to educate American people about how the banking system operates, and in particular, what a solution might look like. And the NEED Act has these qualities. The first thing, that the ability of Wall Street to have create money and therefore create this gigantic pile of interest that they expropriate would be ended. That is, Wall Street banks could make loans from their customer accounts that they get in and from their assets, but they could only make those kinds of loans. They could not create the 10-to-1 ratio with fractional reserve banking. Sue or Rita, would you like to talk about the other two aspects of the NEED Act?
Well, I can mention. So what Eugene was talking about is one of the three. That is, legally, money is decided what it is in a society by the law. Like legal tender, it's legal. So there would be a change in the bookkeeping rules I used to work for a Wall Street bank, and I was always moving money around. I was always debiting from this account and crediting to that account. That's how you move money around. And I always thought, well, when a bank makes a loan, it takes the money out of that account and it puts it into the borrower's account. No, 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 no. Never has happened in the history of commercial banking in this country since 1793, when the first commercial bank came into this country. They always create their credit. It's not real money, it's bank credit. So that's number one, that the bookkeeping rules are going to be changed. Banks will no longer be able to create their credit. They have to take money from this account and loan it out. Big change, humongous change for the whole world. Number two, our central bank, privately owned Federal Reserve Bank, will be actually taken in as a bureau in the U.S. Treasury. It's not going to be independent. It's not the U.S. Treasury, under this law, will buy all of the shares in the 12 Federal Reserve banks. All the shares are owned by the private commercial member banks. It's all private. They will be paid for those shares, the commercial banks, and those 12 Federal Reserve banks now will come as a bureau of the Fed in under the U.S. Treasury. And there will be a monetary authority, independent monetary authority in the Treasury, specifically to say to Congress, because Congress, that's where the power resides, to create money. It's in our Constitution. We're putting it back into the power of Congress, constitutional law. So the amount of new money every year that Congress can authorize and the Treasury can spend for all of us is monitored by the Monetary Authority, because we don't want inflation. And number three is, now you have a national government that can authorize the creation of money without interest. It's not a debt or anything like that. It's just money. It exists. It circulates. And that money can be spent on common needs, the welfare. That's what our Constitution was based on, common welfare. Those are the three major points.
And what was the third one again?
Can I just say, I always forget this. I'm sorry. 25% of any new money every year is going to be grants to all of the states, per capita grants. It's very important.
The Constitution says Congress shall have power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. That's what the Constitution, it didn't say that you could subcontract that to a Fed that's controlled by Wall Street. So we're asking to follow the Constitution. And that third aspect was setting up a monetary authority about the creation of new money. And that monetary authority would also be able, in this kind of extraordinary circumstances of COVID-13, to appropriate new money for fighting the pandemic, as well as helping the states and localities in their budget crisis now, which is tremendous. They are under constitutional mandates to balance their budgets. The federal government doesn't care about that, because the dollar is the surplus currency for the world. But the state and localities are going to face tremendous hardships, and the taxes will increase, and services like schools will be cut way back. And that's why we need this monetary authority also.
Can I just say something, a slight correction. The monetary authority doesn't authorize the creation of money. That's always Congress. Congress, that's the power in the Constitution. That's Congress's. That's where we can have elected officials that respond to us. If we, our populace gets educated enough, they've dumbed us down.
So you said the Monetary Authority was part of the Treasury Department under this new agency set up with the purchase of the Federal Reserve.
It's the Monetary Authority is in the U.S. Treasury. It's part of the executive.
That's what I just said. Yeah. That's what you said.
There's another way of looking.
I didn't get what the third point was, though. That was in your second point. What was the third point?
The third point was, what is the Congress going to authorize the money to be spent on?
Okay.
So here's where the Green New Deal comes in.
I'm trying to get clarity on what you were saying.
Yeah.
You talked about that in your second point, so I had that in the second point. I was trying to get what the three points were.
Yeah.
So authorization is fundamentally through Congress. It's implemented through the financial authority. It's part of Treasury.
No, it's implemented through the U.S. Treasury. They pay the bills.
Didn't I just say that?
No, well, you said the monetary authority in the U.S. Treasury.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a special monetary authority that's going to be created by the NEED Act. And it's going to be located in the U.S. Treasury, independent of the Treasurer of the United States.
Independent? It's in it or it's not in it?
He cannot influence it. He is not allowed by law to influence it.
One way to look at this is that we need a fourth branch of government. That is, the monetary authority really has to be thought. We have to convince the American people they need a tremendous change in the way money is handled. And I'll show you a book which is very important in this regard. It's called The Lost Science of Money.
Too close.
I'm sorry. By Stephen Zarlinga, 2002. And it is very helpful from a historical and also practical sense. He goes, in particular, the description of the Civil War and the rise of greenbacks, and the quotes coming from Bud earlier is described in this book, and it's very helpful.
So the whole point of this conversation today was to get half a dozen of us here to back Kucinich's old NEED Act from 2011. It's going to get reintroduced by somebody, supposedly, or you're going to look around to try to find somebody to reintroduce it, or I don't understand what the action is.
It's to implement the Green Party platform. We have 1 minute. Green Party platform, which has this greening the dollar, these three steps that is codified in Kucinich's bill. And we're educating people to, number one, explain how the banks create money. That's the opening wedge, because once people understand that they're paying interest on people who have a monopoly, and that monopoly is unjust, and the federal government should distribute the new money tax and debt free without the bankers taking their cut. Over.
Yeah, great ending.
To get candidates who push the issue, because the polls indicate people want it. It's not even a close call. The overwhelming majority of Americans want Medicare for all.